Executive Committee meeting for May 13th, 2025. I'm just looking at our list here real quick. As I'm looking to determine that we have a quorum, and I'll verify that as we move along here, for those of you who are with us for the first time, as well as just other visitors that are listening in on the meeting, this is an open meeting for the public, so anyone can log in and listen in, and we welcome that. Unless identified on the agenda, there's no participation in this meeting by anyone except for board staff and committee members and our attorney general liaison. Outside of that, if you raise your hand, it won't be acknowledged. If there is any interruption to the meeting, we'll address it, but we would ask that you not do that. I would also like to remind folks who may be listening in on behalf of a licensee whose case is going to be discussed today that we do our best not to identify people directly. We use initials oftentimes for licensees or complainants' names, and we will always refer to the agenda item and case number. So if you have no idea what the case number is for someone you may be listening in for, you may want to take a few minutes here as we're getting started and doing some of our initial housekeeping to identify that case number, because we, again, won't identify anybody directly by name. That's just how we course through our agenda. So with that, does it look like we have a quorum? I think we do. Let's go ahead, call this meeting to order, and do a roll call.
Caputo?
Here.
Harris?
Harris?
You got a yes from Dr. Harris.
Yeah, just here. Are you hearing it?
Yes, I was trying to figure out the echo I was getting back on my end. Ali?
Here.
Asfari?
Yeah.
Bukami?
Here.
Gorelick?
Here.
MTS?
Here.
Kalamchi?
I saw Saba connected. You hear Saba?
He's here. I'm going to try and see if I can connect his microphone. Give me a second.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Kappas?
Here.
Martin?
Here.
Matahari?
Here.
And so are we okay just to accept that Saba's with us, or do we want a verbal from him?
I think we're okay to move forward. We definitely have a quorum to move forward, and he can let us know when he's got his mic going.
All right. So, Saba, just let us know when you're connected. Don't mind any interruption, and then we'll just indicate that's your time of joining the meeting. So I'm happy to welcome another new committee member. And if I'm looking at our listing correctly, Ryan, with the addition of Dr. Gorelick, we are full on the investigative committee. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Awesome. Well, you know, really appreciate the interest that our colleagues have out there in participating in this committee. It's a lot of work, as those of us who have been on it now for a few years, or as the young kids like to say, for a minute. But we enjoy it, and we appreciate the opportunity to give back to our communities and the service that we're providing. I know we all feel is important, and so I appreciate all of you. And Jeff, what we'd like to do, if it's okay with you, is give you the floor for a little bit of time here, let you introduce yourself to us, and welcome you to the committee. floor is yours.
Hello, everyone. Dr. Jeff Gorelick. I practiced in Chandler before retiring. I worked about 38 years. I was actually on the I was an investigator from about 1999 for about 20 years, adjudicating cases, doing site reviews and such. And I'm really happy to contribute again and be a part of this. So thank you.
Awesome. And I appreciate your pronunciation. So it's correct to say Gorelick?
Yeah, pronounce the second syllable like Italian.
Okay.
Caputo.
Gotcha. Gorelick. Well, thanks, Jeff. Really happy to have you. For your benefit, Saab, are you with us?
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, you bet. Sorry about that. For your benefit, being a new committee member, we don't do much in terms of introduction or maybe some type of probationary period. We just throw you right in.
Not a problem.
So you are more than welcome to participate at any level you feel comfortable with today.
Okay.
As you probably know from past experience with the board, if there's anything you're not comfortable participating in, you can just abstain when the you're called on for your vote.
I understand.
But that's completely your comfort level based on what your level of preparedness is for today. But we know it does take a little bit of time, and so we get it. In order to help you a little bit and kind of understand our process, have you ever listened in on one of our meetings before?
Not one of these. I go way back before they invented triage, so we adjudicated everything, no matter how frivolous. And then moving forward, as they triaged, instead of having three or four pages of documents, you had hundreds of pages. So I reviewed everything and kind of reminded me of some of the cases I worked on years ago. So I'm used to the dentistry and all of that, just the virtual meetings instead of in the boardroom and stuff. So I'm confident I'll be able to pick it up pretty quick.
I think you absolutely will, given your previous experiences, because as you already identified, there is a lot of material to review. And so we are sort of the first line of decision making. I won't say adjudication because that's left to the full board, and we are not charged that way either by the legislature, the board, or otherwise. So our role is more advisory.
I understand.
So what we do is we review the complaints that are presented to us for any given meeting, and that's identified on the agenda. And we make recommendations to the board. Those recommendations can be anything from dismissal to revocation, and everything in between. And we'll have those discussions, and then a recommendation is made. It may get a second. If it doesn't, obviously, we look to the next opportunity. If it does get a second, we take a vote and we see how it fares. And we move on from there. And then the board then will work with those recommendations. The hope is that it allows the licensee as well as the person making the complaint to understand kind of what we're thinking about and considering it, and they can move on to maybe further prepare themselves and be ready to have a more robust discussion when they get to the board.
I understand.
In light of that, we operate as if this is the first time we are seeing anything about the licensee. Sometimes we do know of a licensee from a previous meeting that we've had regarding them. Sometimes in the same agenda as there is today, as you might have recognized.
I did see that, yes.
More than one complaint involving a licensee. Sometimes they're connected. Sometimes they're not. And if we ever need guidance, as I mentioned, our attorney general representation is our assistant attorney general, Seamus Monahan, who I think, Seamus, you're on with us, yeah?
Yes, of course.
Yeah, so Seamus keeps us on the straight and narrow. If we are veering off the path or we're going into areas that aren't appropriate, he informs us of that to make sure that we're making decisions that are well-supported and within our charge as a committee. So we don't look at any past actions from a licensee. We realize there are public records out there, but we don't take that into account. That will happen at the board level when the complaint reaches them. So we just are looking at that complaint as if it was the first time we're seeing it and making a decision based on just what's in front of us and what's been presented by the investigator. Related to that, and I'm sure you are appreciative of this and have been through this, oftentimes when reviewing a complaint by a patient or designee or representative, we do see other things that are identified by the investigator. And we have an option at that time to either make a recommendation to the board if we feel as though there's enough information presented by the investigator on that particular issue to make a recommendation. If not, then we ask for a new complaint to be opened up for that particular issue. Or if we feel as though more information needs to be gathered, then we can make that recommendation as well. And I believe, as I'm thinking about all this, is Julie with us today?
I believe she's out of town till tomorrow, the day after.
And is anybody from our investigative group with us? Not today.
Okay.
So well, often we'll have, and we've designated Dr. Cutler to be sort of a liaison for us. We may ask questions about just information. We try not to elicit an opinion because that's not their role, but we just may ask technical questions or try to relay information to her so that we can have a more seamless or connected interaction with the group of investigators we have working with the board. Additional things that we do in our recommendations, as I said, dismissal, letter of concern are usually pretty straightforward. My advice to the committee is if you are making a recommendation for a letter of concern, you would have made the effort to put some language together. So we like to provide some type of language that encapsulates the message that we want to send forward to the licensee in the letter of concern. So then the board staff can provide that to the board for their consideration. Beyond that, we get into, as you know, our non-disciplinary actions. And similarly, if we feel as though the violation doesn't rise to the level of a disciplinary action, we can recommend a non-disciplinary action. Similarly, I always request that members have an idea of what they're recommending for that non-disciplinary action. What kind of CE do you think licensee should be involved with or recommend, that sort of thing. And just having some idea down is when we're having the discussion, it makes our deliberations, if you will, a little more efficient.
Okay.
When we get to our disciplinary recommendations, we usually look to matters that we feel rise to a higher level. And oftentimes, and this is just something that's been happening a little bit more with the committee, is utilizing some of the resources that are available to us. And those are, and we'll talk about them. I don't know if any of that's coming up today, but at least that's my initial look. But certainly anything's open to the committee. But we have resource programs for referral. For example, we have a remediation entity called Credits Cares, and we can direct a licensee to Credits Cares. We can direct them, giving them an idea of the number of CEs we want the licensee to complete, as well as the areas that we want to be covered through that experience. And then Credit Cares takes over and develops a curriculum for the licensee. We also use two other programs called PIP and PROBE, and PIP is more along the lines of record keeping, risk management, and probes at a little bit of a higher level in terms of recommendations for that licensee. So those are programs that are just already set up, and so it's not like we have to have the licensee go create their own program, basically. If we're so concerned, we also get involved with the Attorney General's office through Seamus's guidance for fraud, and we can direct towards investigation through the Arizona Fraud Act if it rises to that. We also can make recommendations for suspension or probation, particularly if there's a violation that we feel needs directed resolution or interaction at that time. So we may say the licensee has a practice restriction until that CE or whatever the recommendation was is completed. And then beyond that, we can do things like a recommendation for revocation or probation. Generally speaking, if there is restitution involved, we make the recommendation, we would have to make a disciplinary recommendation to then include whatever that restitution is. As you may know from past experience, we only make considerations of restitution for what the actual dentistry was done by that particular licensee. We don't do any pain and suffering, and we don't do anything related to what another dentist might have completed for the patient after treatment with their dentist. So it's usually just involved. Restitution is specifically involving what the dentist did, and we feel did not meet the appropriate level of care for that patient. The only other thing I can think of is our noncompliance of subpoena. That is the only statutory violation that doesn't have to involve a disciplinary action. So if the licensee did violate their subpoena request, we can institute a violation of that code and or that statute, and that carries a $500 fine. Outside of that, I don't know what your familiarity is with 32120101. As well as 32-1263 for statutes, but those are the ones that we refer to the most often. 32-1201-01 is usually involving the licensee directly, and then 32-1263 oftentimes involves business entity and may or may not, just depending on what the statutory availability is, may or may not involve a licensee. That's kind of about what we do in a nutshell. Ryan or Seamus, did I miss anything or anything to add?
This is April. So I just want to add that in terms of staff, we do have two new staff members as well. Tanya, hopefully you will recognize, but our newest member is Jamie. And so as you had pointed out in the beginning of the meeting, that you will only answer raised hands by staff members. I wanted to make sure that the committee knew who those staff members are.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. Thank you. So you said Tanya and who else?
Yeah, so we have Tanya Vasquez and Jamie. Jamie, I'm so sorry.
Shapiro.
Thank you.
Hey, everybody.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah, awesome. Okay. Anything from the committee that maybe you'd like to add to any of the comments that I just made for Dr. Gorelick? Okay. So with that, let's get into our meeting here. So next thing to discuss, and Jeff, this will be something that's also helpful to you, so I'm glad I'm seeing it on the agenda, but it's a declaration of conflicts of interest. So if I say this wrong, I know Seamus will help me here, but typically if you're going to declare a conflict, you would identify the case number that you feel you have a conflict with so that you would not participate in the discussion or decision making on that case. A conflict doesn't have to be just that you know that person. The conflict really relates to how close and involved are you with that person that you would be unable to make a neutral decision as you would for anybody else? And if you feel as though because of that relationship you're conflicted and would be unable to do that, then that would be a reason to identify a conflict and not participate. But just knowing someone or even having a casual relationship with them does not mean that you would have to declare a conflict, nor do you need to declare a conflict if you believe that there is none there and you can function neutrally. You don't have to say, I have a conflict, but I'm fine with not it not being a problem, if that makes sense. So conflicts are really meant for those situations where you have a relationship such that you could not make a reasonable, neutral, unbiased decision on that particular matter. So understanding that, I would ask the committee to identify any conflicts that they have. Was that you, Mindy?
Yes.
Go ahead.
5A16-202-500022.
Okay. Any others?
That's it. Thank you.
16. Thank you. Any other conflicts by the committee? Okay. So we should be fine on that particular one. Thank you very much, Dr. Motihari. So the next thing we'll do is get into the – oh, sorry, one more thing to do. My apologies. Then we'll get into the cases. So the next thing to do is have a vote based on the minutes that the committee was provided from April 1st of this year. So is there any corrections, changes, or edits that are needed based on the minutes that were reviewed by the committee? And if there are none, I would accept a motion to approve the minutes from April 1st.
So move.
So we have a motion by Dr. Kalamchi. Is there a second?
Cap a second.
Cap second. Okay. Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali?
Yes.
Masrari?
Yes.
Lukami?
Yes.
Gorelick?
Yes.
MTS?
April, please only ask the members who were present last time.
Well, I guess I should have abstained.
Yep, there you go. Perfect.
Yes.
Okay, Kalamchi?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries. So the minutes have been approved for April 1st, 2025. Okay, now we are on to agenda item 5, and that is the discussion of the cases that have been presented before us today. And again, just to give you an idea of how we do this, Jeff, as chair, I will propose cases that I feel are appropriate for dismissal. I will go through the entire list of what I'm proposing to the board for dismissal. If you identify any cases that I have recommended for dismissal as cases that you would like to discuss further, then when I'm done reading that list, you would just identify the case that you would like to be removed to have a further discussion about. And it only takes one committee member that wants to do that. And so we make ensure that everybody is allowed to use the opportunity to use their voice and concern about a complaint. So I'm just the starting point. If you agree with me, great. If you don't, then you would just indicate what case it is that you want to remove for further discussion, and we'll do that. And then generally speaking, again, just my preference is if you want to remove a case for further discussion, I typically am going to go to you to discuss your position and hear you first regarding that particular complaint. Okay? So with that, The following cases are being recommended for dismissal. Agenda item 5A1, case number 2024-00359. Agenda item 5A2, case number 2024-00421. Agenda item 5A4, case number 2024-00457. Agenda item 5A5, case number 2024-00472. Agenda item 5A6, case number 2024-00479. Agenda item 5A7, case number 2024-00497. Agenda item 5A9, case number 2024-00516. Agenda item 5A10, case number 2025-00013MP. Agenda item 5A11, case number 2025-00014MP. Agenda item 4A12, case number 2025-00015. Agenda item 5A13, case number 2025-00016. Agenda item 5A15, case number 2025-00021. Agenda item 5A17, case number 2025-00023. Agenda item 5A18, case number 2025-00024. Agenda item 5A19, case number 2025-00034. Agenda item 5A21, case number 2025-00038. Agenda item 5A22, case number 2025-00044. Agenda item 5A23, case number 2025-00045. Agenda item 5A25, case number 2025-00053. Agenda item 5A26, case number 2025-00054. Agenda item 5A27, case number 2025-00056. And agenda item 5A28, case number 2025-00069. Do you get those, okay, April?
I do, thank you.
Okay. So are there any committee members that would like to remove one of those cases or any of those cases? Dr. Fukama.
I may have misheard. I heard case 5A11, and then what was the next case after that?
After 11 was agenda item 5A12. Case number 2025-00015.
I'll withhold. I would like to withdraw case 12.
Okay. So we'll have you speak to that when we get there. Thank you. Any others, Dr. Fukami?
No.
Okay.
I have a question. So we're going to listen.
Just a sec.
Oh, sorry.
Okay. Who's speaking?
Jeff Gorelick, Dr.
Okay, Gorelick. Jeff, go ahead. You have a question?
I believe the previous doctor said they want to talk about case number 11. I was going to add number 12.
It was a question of what did I say after agenda item 11, and it was 12, and that's the one we pulled, not agenda item 5A11. We pulled agenda item 5A12.
Well, let me look at 11 and 12. I'm looking at that case, 11, and I think I checked that one. I'd like to talk about that one.
Okay. So let me make a note there. So, again, we'll defer to you when we get there for comments, but I appreciate that.
Thank you.
So, yeah, absolutely. I'm just making my note here. I'm pretty good with voices, but it's helpful if you say your name.
Understood.
Yeah, that's fine. Or raise your hand, because I'm actually getting a little notification on the side when hands are raised, which maybe is something that Google Meet did, but I like it. But okay, any others, Jeff?
So 11 and 12. So are we going to review number 12?
Yes. Yes, we are. That was
okay. I want to review that one too.
Yeah,
so
no problem.
I agree.
Yeah, that's okay. All right, any other committee members? Okay, so with that, we have the aforementioned cases, including the two that were removed, recommended for dismissal. And April, you're good on all the numbers?
Yes, I got them.
Okay, so can I get a second on recommending the previously listed cases with the recommendation of dismissal for the full board?
I second, Dr. Gorelick.
Okay, second by Dr. Gorelick. Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali? Dr.
Madi? You there, Madi?
Yes.
Okay. Asari?
Yes.
Bukhari?
Yes.
Gorelick?
Yes.
Imtiaz?
Yes.
Kalanchi?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Ladahari?
Yes.
Okay. Motion carries for that recommendation of dismissal for the cases listed previously. So now we'll move into the remaining cases for further discussion. So the first case we're going to start with is agenda item 5A3, case number 2024-00426. And for the committee, I'm looking in our packet on page 490. And I was going to propose a non-disciplinary recommendation as well as a violation of 32-1201-23 for noncompliance with subpoena. So we'll start there and open it up for discussion.
Hi, this is Harris. I agree with your assessment, with the exception of failure to subpoena, which I do think they should do. This issue was more of they forgot to mention a space maintainer, and I don't see that as something warranting disciplinary action for sure.
Yeah. Hold on just a sec. Umar.
So sometimes during GA cases, you'll take x-rays or you'll extract a tooth. Like, Anthony. So it's good to send a dental assistant back or just quickly pop out and let the parent know these are the changes that are recommended, because most of the time the child's already under anesthesia and the decision has to be made quick. So, if you're going to do a spacer or something like that, you should let the parent know beforehand rather than after the case is completed. Under general anesthesia, whether it's a spacer or an extraction of a tooth that you were going to crown, or, you know, any change to the initial treatment plan.
Right. And I think the challenge being, which I'm hearing both you and sort of Skip say, is even though you may feel that it's necessary, the appropriate thing to do is still advise the parent before you do it.
Correct.
Yeah. Which I would agree.
I could have gone for letter of concern as well. I think it's kind of on that edge.
Yeah, I was thinking four CEs in diagnosis, treatment planning, and consent. And like I said, non-disciplinary. But I'm fine. What were you thinking, Umar?
I was just thinking a letter of concern, just mentioning, you know, please obtain proper consent before treatment.
Okay. Well, I'll defer to you guys. I mean, I'm okay with it. I think for the formalities part of it, I think we should go ahead and take care of the failure to comply with subpoena. So we have a violation of 32-1201-0123. Is there a second to that violation?
There are seconds.
Okay. So roll call on the violation.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali?
Madi?
Asari?
Yes.
Bukami?
Yes.
Gorelick?
Yes.
MTS?
Yes.
Kalanchi?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
And Dr. Early?
Yes.
Dr. Caputo?
Seamus?
Thank you. Before you guys get to the disciplinary recommendation, it appeared you guys were looking at a letter of concern and a $500 non-disciplinary order. So I just wanted to state that's the road you're going down for the subpoena failure, that you can wrap those all into one. If it's just for the subpoena failure, if there's something else that's non-disciplinary, you can put that all into one order.
My understanding was, and you can help me on this, but historically, we've dealt with the subpoena failure as a statutory violation because it is, but we could still recommend a non-disciplinary or letter of concern action. But what I hear you saying is we don't even have to do that.
No, no. So you can – the non-disciplinary order, because it's non-disciplinary, can have the administrative $500 penalty for failure to comply with the subpoena, unless you believe that it should be disciplinary action.
Right. I got you on that. But, no, yeah, I think you're fine. So, all right. Well, we obviously are making that recommendation for the administrative fine of $500 for the failure to comply with subpoena. So I appreciate that. So we'll include that in our final disposition here. So moving forward, was just to the committee, was anybody leaning towards letter of concern versus non-disciplinary?
I was leaning towards the letter of concern. This is Dr. Gorelick, Jeff.
Yeah, that's fine. And that's all you have to say right now. We'll get there. I'm just trying to get a sense, a straw poll, if you will. Anybody else? Anybody thinking non-disciplinary?
Yes.
Yes.
Baba?
Yes, Gorelick.
Well, you just said you were okay with a letter of concern.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm not sure at the appropriate time, but I guess we'll discuss it more. But in reading this case, it seems like a disconnect between the doctor in the back and the front office and the business entity.
Right now, we're just deciding, are we leaning towards a letter of concern or a non-disciplinary action?
Okay.
So, because we'll get into it, but if it's a letter of concern, we'll approach it a little bit differently. Anybody else from the folks that are being quiet? Deb?
I could go either way.
Okay.
I had it down as non-disciplinary CE first, but it was a lukewarm stance.
No, I get it. I'm hearing you. Cynthia.
Same as Deb. The only thing I would hazard a guess is I don't think actually this was the actual treatment in question was done while the patient was under GA. I think there was an opportunity.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I hear you. All right. Mia?
Sorry, I was the same, non-disciplinary, but I'm okay with letter of concern.
Okay. Well, let's see how we do that. So you guys are going to have to vote your conscience. So I'm proposing a non-disciplinary action. Is there a second for that?
Second.
Okay, second by Calamci. Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali?
Yes.
Asari?
Yes.
Lukami?
Yes.
Gerlick? Dr. Gerlick?
I'm sorry. If I say no, then we can go towards letter of concern, or we're doing the disciplinary.
We are taking a vote for that right now. So if you say it, you're just voting, how are you in favor of a non-disciplinary action or letter of concern?
Letter of concern.
So then vote no.
No, that's what I thought.
Perfect.
MTS?
I'll do yes.
Calamci?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Manohari?
Yes.
Okay, so majority for non-disciplinary action. So that's the road we'll go down here. I'm proposing, as I mentioned earlier, four CEs in diagnosis, treatment planning, and informed consent. Ryan, would that be the equivalent of doing something like risk management?
Yeah.
Okay, so four CEs in risk management. Other thoughts by the committee?
Harris seconds.
Harris seconds. Cynthia, were you going to say something?
I also said second.
Okay. All right, so we have a motion on the floor for and second for a non-disciplinary recommendation to include four CEs in risk management. Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali?
Yes.
Asari?
Yes.
Lukami?
Yes.
Gerlick?
Yes.
MTS?
Yes.
Calamci?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Manohari?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries, and April, that will include the noncompliance with subpoena, the fine of $500, too, okay?
Okay, thank you.
You betcha. Thank you all. All right, so we are now on agenda item 4A. Why do I keep saying 4? I don't know why. It's a Roman numeral, and I just have to convince myself. 5A8. Case number 2024-00498. And for the committee, I'm looking at page 1358 in our packet. I was leaning towards a non-disciplinary action and recommending pretty much the same thing, risk management. So with that, let's have a discussion. Okay. Dang it. Are there folks leaning towards a letter of concern here or similar non-disciplinary?
This is Cynthia. Leaning, okay.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Dr. Graham.
This is Jeff. In this case, I would go more the non-disciplinary than letter of concern. I didn't really finish my thought on the last case. So do I say something now or do I let it go or what?
It's fine. I mean,
okay.
If you feel as though you want to say something, I want you to feel comfortable doing that. I'm not trying to cut you off by any means.
Okay. Well, the reason why I was thinking letter of concern on the last case, because it's a procedural situation, and I know that we're going after the, or we're talking about the specific complainant and, or the specific, licensee. My concern, the reason for, is it's a procedural situation where there's a disconnect between the front and the back office, and we're protecting the public by having these things not happen over and over again. And, you know, yes, the doctor will probably learn to stop and make sure that the patient's parents in the outside in the waiting room are notified. In this situation, you know, the person has to know that they're not licensed to take x-rays. Therefore, they're liable for the aiding and abetting. So it's more of a personal thing instead of a corporation or a business entity. That's my difference between the two.
Okay.
Umar.
Yes. Thank you.
Yeah, you bet.
I had it more for non-disciplinary, just because I think in one of the pages I read, they added notes after the fact when they were subpoenaed for notes. So,
yeah.
I just wanted to do something on record keeping.
Yeah.
Like three credits or something.
And that's that risk management that includes
risk management.
And it includes ethics too as a
Yeah. That's perfect.
Okay. All right, Skip, let's take you on again. Is there a second for a non-disciplinary recommendation to include four CEs in risk management?
Second.
Second by Calanchi. Roll call.
Kuku?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali? Dr. Ali?
Yes.
Asari?
Yes.
Bukami?
Yes.
Garlic?
Yes.
Imtiaz?
Yes.
Kalanji?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Matahari?
Yes.
Okay. Motion carries for that non-disciplinary recommendation. We are now on agenda item 5A11, case number 2025-00014MP. And Jeff, you're up. And then as you may have noticed what I've done, it's helpful if as you're discussing these cases, if you could give a page number of reference, and that allows the committee to kind of see where you're at and understanding what you're discussing. Okay?
Okay. So
well, you're up on this case.
Okay. So this case starts on page 1707. Board review of a malpractice claim. No CBCT, not a problem. Pano is adequate for this. Maybe too difficult to, let's see. Failure to diagnose, failure to refer. The notes from the consultant and the supporting documents show that, this, probably routine extraction for an oral surgeon was nowhere near routine for this particular person. And then also the waited 2 weeks for the referral, which is on page 1722. So I feel like this should be an uphold and not a dismiss.
Well, we're not upholding anything, right?
I'm sorry.
We are.
Our recommendation would be not to dismiss.
No, I understand, but what you have to go beyond that. Are you recommending a letter of concern? Are you recommending a non-disciplinary action? Or are you recommending a disciplinary action?
Okay.
What are your thoughts?
Well, under 3212.0101. Unprofessional misconduct, looking for the failure to refer, failure to diagnose.
Oftentimes the catch-all is 14.
Yeah. Okay. Committing any conduct practice constitute danger of health, welfare of the patient or public, I would agree. And then
it wasn't a failure to refer. It wasn't an immediate referral.
Yes.
The referral was made. It's just your thought was it should have happened sooner.
Yes, and I think considering the notes from the oral surgeon that it was a pretty routine root tip removal shows that this could have been not so drawn out for 2 weeks because of the paresthesia and stuff. Maybe it could have been avoided.
This is Harris. I also think that a good argument could be made for failure to refer before the extraction.
Yes.
Well, that's obvious, but once you get in there, your duty is to stop and not make it any worse. You know, when it started going sideways, the licensee could have stopped and sent it to the oral surgeon at that point.
The decision to refer is also that referral should have happened on that day with an emphasis on the patient going to the oral surgeon in a timely manner, not just wandering off.
Right. I think
if I could help you a little bit, this is Harris, I'd like to make a recommendation for a disciplinary finding on this particular case.
Okay. And do you have any thoughts about what you'd propose? Are you seeing
disciplinary finding with a recommendation for CE in treatment planning, risk management, and failure to refer?
Okay.
Thank you.
And in your case, as you were clarifying, it wasn't the investigator's finding. Your position is this should have been referred even before he got started.
Yes, sir. This is a high-risk tooth. It should have been referred before, and once it was a struggle, it should have been referred that day or at least within a day or two. And
okay.
Should follow up on that referral.
I think the notes were pretty clear that there was no CVCT, but even on the pano, the roots were clearly below the IA, and I think, you know, if you were looking at that x-ray, you know, you would have known that the nerve was going to be part of this endeavor. So I think failure to refer from the get-go is important.
Okay. Sabat, were you still there?
Yeah.
You are. Go ahead.
Yeah. I think I agree with Dr. Harris. It's a failure to refer from the get-go.
Okay.
And this is failed attempted extraction. And I agree, it should have been immediately stopped. Call the oral surgeon you refer normally, even after 4 or 5 o'clock, and just tell him, I want you to see this patient. That's what it is, not 2 or 3 weeks later.
Okay. All right, so if I'm understanding correctly, we have identified a violation of 32.12.01.0114. Is that consistent with you, Skip?
Yes, sir.
All right, so there's a motion by Dr. Harris, seconded by Dr. Gorelick, regarding a violation of 32.12.01.0114. Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali?
Yes.
Asrari?
Yes.
Bukhari?
Yes.
Gorelick?
Yes.
Imtiaz?
Yes.
Kalanji?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Not a hurry.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries for that finding of that violation. Skip, you are recommending a disciplinary action to include?
CE is in risk management, diagnosis and treatment planning, and management of surgical complications.
Right, so you said diagnosis and management. Is that what you said? Or diagnosis and treatment planning?
Yeah.
And do you want to say diagnosis and treatment planning of?
Complex surgical cases.
Complex surgical cases, including extractions, or does that encompass in that?
I think it's encompassed in that.
Okay. So 4 CEs in risk management. How many CEs in diagnosis and treatment planning of complex surgical cases? 8?
4.
Okay, I think 8 would be better, but...
6? Split the difference?
Usually
right. 6 is a 1 day, 4 is a half day, 8 is probably 2 days.
Okay. Are you good with 6, Skip?
Sure.
Okay. Yep. So 6 CEs in diagnosis and treatment planning of complex surgical procedures. And then you had one other thing on there, Skip.
Yeah, risk management.
And then, well,
surgical complications.
Oh, and then complications. So, 4 CEs in surgical complication management of surgical complications.
Yes.
So we have a recommendation for disciplinary action to include 4 CEs in risk management, 4 CEs in management of surgical complications, and 6 CEs in diagnosis and treatment planning of complex surgical procedures. Is there a second?
I second it. Gorelick.
Second by Gorelick. Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali?
Yes.
Asari?
Yes.
Bukami?
I'm sorry. Yes.
Gorelick?
Yes.
Antias?
Yes.
Kalanji?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
Motion carries for that that disciplinary recommendation with the included CE. And April, you got all that okay?
I did, thank you.
I'm making my own notes, so appreciate the extra time here. Okay. All right. We are now on agenda item 4A12, case number 2025-00015. Dr. Fukami, the floor is yours.
Okay. I asked that this case be pulled so we could discuss in part to seek input from the rest of the committee as well. So just a reminder, this is an older patient that was scheduled for an full mouth extraction and an all-in-4. And then I think there were some second doubts that came in from the other family members as to what the appropriateness of doing that. Monies were refunded for the most part, but the patient's daughter did file a complaint concerned as to whether advantage was being taken of an older patient in this circumstance. So I have questions regarding or concerns regarding 3 areas here. First one regarding the ability of this patient to consent and understand and give full informed consent. I struggle with this one, but I think that I agree with you that particular part of the the complaint can be dismissed. I don't really have as much concerns on this one. It seems to me, at least from reading the investigative report here, that the patient was capable of giving that consent and seemed to understand. 90 years old is different for different people. And I think that if that part to me is not necessarily worth the discussion, my concern is more the actual process that this occurred. And so 2 parts to that. One is, I think that I'm trying hard to understand better how these clinics that are devoted solely to providing all-in-4 treatment do evaluate these patients and determine if they are appropriate candidates for this kind of treatment. From the dental side, what I see here is that this patient came in for his first appointment. I don't see anything here about any comprehensive evaluation. There is no charting to do with hard or soft tissues. There's no actual alternative treatment plan given. I'm not really sure how you can have an alternative treatment plan if no exam is done. And I don't see consents related to which teeth would be extracted, those kinds of things. That's number one. My second concern, though, and you know me, is going to be more on the medical side here. And if you look at page 1832, there are specific statements made that this patient was medically cleared for this procedure. This was planned to be done under anesthesia. I don't see where there's anything in the submitted materials to indicate that this patient was medically cleared. I'm unclear on how this licensee obtained a preoperative risk assessment. I would say when I look just cursorily at the two submitted primary care physician notes that it clearly states that this patient has a history of asbestosis, had had a chest x-ray done, yes, mild microcytic anemia, but his pulse ox on room air is 94 and 95% on two different days. And so I don't see anything here that he indicated a discussion with someone, another professional, regarding the patient's respiratory status before planning for what would be a fairly extensive procedure under a long anesthetic.
And so, was it indicated the length of anesthesia and the level? Did you see that? I didn't see that, and that's why I'm asking.
None of those. Yes, that's correct. And that's the problem, I think, with this charting system, is that nothing is itemized in terms of the treatment plan and the steps involved. So I don't know if a comprehensive exam was done. I don't know when the consults were done. I don't know when the discussion with the anesthesia team was done or if that workup was done. And to that end, I have some concerns. He did not proceed with treatment, obviously. He actually subsequently had treatment done with another dentist who did not proceed with an all-in-four extractions, but instead was able to bring him to restorative health with, I think, a much lesser treatment plan. But I would say in this case, when considering such a large treatment plan, I'm kind of surprised that some of these other details were included. Again, case was not proceeded with, so my recommendation was for a non-disciplinary CE that would at least target some of these concerns that I have here. I don't necessarily see a violation per se, but I welcome a discussion on that.
Okay. Skip?
Forgive me, but I'm going to recommend disciplinary just for no other reason than I think there's an ethical issue here.
And what are you considering?
My recommendation would be a disciplinary finding with CEs and ethics and treatment planning. I think taking an ASA 2 plus 88-year-old man and talking him into, tens of thousands of dollars of treatment that he has to get a loan for, I have an ethical problem with that if there are alternatives. And I didn't see evidence that those alternatives were presented in a fair manner.
I'll tell you where my struggle is here, because I'm hearing you both well, and here's my challenge, and I think it's kind of what Cynthia had said earlier. You know, we're looking at this, and we have our own interpretations, but does that put us on a slippery slope in terms of what we're seeing? Being that we don't know the cognitive function or ability of this patient, right? We can see the pictures, and we can say what our experience has been with somebody of this age. I'm not necessarily disagreeing with either of you. I'm troubled by this, but I'm wondering if this is a path to go. I think what my level of comfort would be, and this is something that I would push on our investigators a little bit more, is maybe a more robust investigation to exactly the things that we're not seeing, right? Where was the comprehensive exam? Where was the hard and soft tissue charting? Where was the alternate treatment plan approaches with this patient? And I think if we are finding that a practice such as this, then in response to those requests, can't provide that information, then I'm going more down that pathway of, are they functioning in an ethical, moral manner that gives us a little more evidenced opportunity or documented opportunity to pursue that? Whereas I feel right now, we're sort of interpreting on our own what we feel. I'm not, and like I said, I'm not disagreeing with it. That's where I struggled. And I'll tell you, I struggled in reading about the daughter. Like, I get it. The daughter was concerned, but the office didn't even know the patient had a daughter, and it's not necessarily required for patients to go in and disclose their family history that way, but for the daughter to get involved afterwards, good, bad, or indifferent, it doesn't necessarily indicate that the office was doing something wrong. I'm not disagreeing, though. I'm struggling with this, and that's why I'm happy to have this discussion. But I think if we're going to go down a path of making any recommendations, I actually think we should get more information about this particular patient and or ask for there to be an audit done of charting that's being done at this office. That's I would be more inclined to do that.
This is Jeff Gorilla. I agree with you. Listening to your discussion, I think you articulate exactly what I was feeling. It's more of a there seems to be a discourse. They're so focused on the all on four, all on X, that there's no documentation for all of the normal, you know, treatment planning and diagnosis and alternative treatment plans. There was no documentation in anywhere that I tried to sift through it to see about alternative treatment plans for this guy. And, you know, I agree with you. I've done work on older people. They want to get it done. And I, you know, if they're healthy enough, who knows if they use it for a week, a day, or 10 years. That's not my, it's not for me to decide. But I think, as far as a procedural thing at this particular office, not having diagnosis, treatment planning, and alternative treatment plans, that's what I get hung up on.
Cynthia.
Oh, yes. Thanks for your comments, both of you. I am 100% in agreement with you regarding the question on his cognitive ability and the family members coming in at a later time. You know, one could argue if the daughter was very so concerned about her father's ability that she could obtain a power of attorney, right? I mean, there are other better steps to go. So that, I should say, if I haven't already stated, that actually was not part of my concern with this case. You know, it should be, I guess, but I think we can argue that it's gray enough here that I don't think it should be the primary concern. My concern rests more with what could have been a worse situation, right, where they proceeded and they had issues because there was a bad medical outcome or because he really didn't understand that there were alternatives to care and then was dissatisfied that the expectations either for during the procedure weren't met or afterward, right? And so I think that's all part of it. I don't see evidence here that any of that was discussed. And to your point on not having information here, there is indication in this chart that the investigator did, in fact, follow up and request further clarification on those details, including alternative treatments and where the charting was and all those things. So they did ask for those things, I believe. Now, I'm going to leave that to the other folks on this committee who have a lot more knowledge about this than I do. Again, for me, on the medical side, I would really question on the appropriateness of this patient for this care, at least without further workup. And even though this patient wasn't treated, I think there's an opportunity here for education for this licensee so that perhaps we can prevent any future circumstances
so
like
just
this one.
Going back to your previous comment about the request, the investigator requested that information and they just were not provided it? Or what did you see? Because I didn't see that.
So I think during the interview, they said that they asked for it and the licensee stated that, yes, alternative treatment plans were indeed discussed during the appointment. He just didn't have them available, or they weren't part of the chart.
Okay.
Same with the carding, et cetera.
Okay. Saba.
Hi. All comment mentioned, I agree with that. I think we just have a picture and x-ray and comment, but to me, just looking at the picture in 1811, and 90 years old, which is, you know, looking at that, to amputate these teeth, losing bone, it's really not viable for any clinician to do that. These teeth, I don't see any abscess, no drainage. It just needs some filling. And I don't know. I mean, who would take all these teeth out? That's my, because who will amputate this mouth from these teeth? I wouldn't accept that.
Okay. Deb.
I actually don't think I have anything to add except to call the attention to when we're talking about the mental state of the patient. On page 1889, there is a recent wellness exam with the physician, and it does indicate under psychiatric that the patient has good judgment, mental insight, is normal mood and affect, active and alert. So I think, you know, to me, everything in the medical part and in terms of ability to consent is supported by his medical reviews, which we have two. We have the one in 2023 and one in 2024, and both say kind of the same thing. So I wasn't worried about or wasn't concerned about the patient's ability to consent. I think it comes down to whether you agree or disagree with the treatment plan. Well, the medical part, I have to defer, obviously. But as far as whether how much, to what degree that we would expect this clinic and these providers to get into specific alternate treatment plans doesn't seem to make sense when they are a clinic that clearly states right up front that we don't do that. So, and the patient presumably knew that this patient or this patient presented himself to this clinic knowing or should have known that this is the kind of treatment that you're going to hear about, not all the other alternatives that might be available in dentistry.
Okay. Mia, did you have anything or there you are?
Oh, I agree, Dr. Fukami, Dr. Kalamji. I also wanted to say in regards to what Deb was saying, if someone comes to my office, even though I am an endodontist, and they know that's all I do, I still talk about alternatives, including not doing treatment, including extraction, and to the limited capacity I have, we may discuss option of a bridge or option of an implant versus doing endodontic treatment. So I am uncomfortable with the fact that on page 1817, they talk about not only no soft tissue exam, no full mouth perioprobing, no existing, there's not even oral cancer screening. So I lean more towards disciplinary as some of the other doctors had mentioned also.
Okay. I appreciate that. Skip?
Yeah, I think they all probably have a good problem. I'm going to state it, and that is that if you're an all-in-4 clinic, you still are obligated to present them with non-all-in-4 treatment plans and to suggest that it's on the patient to understand that some dentists don't present comprehensive options and alternatives is outside the standard of care, in my opinion. They may not want to present other treatments, but it is their duty to do so. And I feel strongly about that.
So we have two issues on the table. The one issue is this issue about our ethical obligation to provide appropriate care and treatment for our patients, which includes appropriate diagnosis and treatment planning, as well as alternate treatment approaches versus just one treatment approach. The second issue we have on the table is the medical presentation of a older patient who clearly has presented pathology, and the concern, and this is where it gets a little tricky, but it's a merited concern, is that did this office potentially get a opportunity to miss a significant outcome if it would have proceeded with some kind of sedation at some level and treatment that could have been extensive and potentially hurt this patient. I'm only putting that to the side because obviously that's a little bit more difficult to discuss. But the issue being, there was a medical presentation of this patient that it seemed like the office didn't pay attention to. So, Deb, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to also, it is a little bit of a disconnect, I think, between what is written in the chart on 1849. It is written on entry, on the chart entry that does say that thoroughly discuss the risks of the proposed treatment, but also discuss treatment options, including no treatment, referral to general dentist, periodontist, endodontist, oral surgeon, or prosthodontist for second opinion. So I think the point I was making, not that they didn't have an obligation to talk about these other options, it's just to what detail and, you know, if you're looking for a written treatment plan, I don't think that expectation is realistic. I think the note here is what's appropriate. You know, you have other options. You could go to a general dentist. You could do this. You could do that. Even mentioning that there might be a bridge, you know, whatever. But to have detailed treatment workups or treatment, you know, detailed treatment plans, I think that's an unrealistic expectation. And I don't think any other specialist would go to that extent either. So that's my point. I just wanted to clarify.
No, I understand. And I mean, kind of where I started in all of this, I mean, going back to our initial discussion, we're asked to look at what's presented to us. And I realize that sometimes we do have some interpretation, but does that interpretation become a slippery slope? And I get it. And I hear what you're saying. Cynthia.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm discussing this well. So, Deb, I think I agree with you. I don't expect to see a whole bunch of several sheets of alternative treatment plans. I think I would be comfortable actually in the absence of treatment plans if charting was done. If something had showed me that they actually took into account that not everybody is a candidate for all in four. Does that make sense?
The question is, can you come to that conclusion based, and I think what Deb is saying. It makes sense, but can you come to that conclusion based on what's recorded in the chart? Because the chart said they did.
And so hence that's why I think I lean towards
and I get it. I get it. I understand. All right. Skip, where are you at on this?
I'd like to make a motion for a disciplinary finding in treatment planning and ethics.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, second by Kalamshi. Roll call.
Before we do that, did the committee vote on an actual violation?
It would be, we haven't, April, and I guess we could start there, so that's fine. So, Skip, are you fine with 32-12-01-14?
Yes, sir. That's what I was thinking.
Okay. So we'll convert that. Thank you, April. That a motion for violation of 32-12-01-01-14. Moved by Harris and seconded by Kalamchik. Thank you. Roll call.
Caputo?
No.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali?
No.
Asari?
Yes.
Bukami?
No.
Gorelick?
Yes.
MTS?
Yes.
Kalamchik?
Yes.
Kappas?
No.
Martin?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
I think the yeses have it. Is that, am I correct, April?
Yes.
Okay. So motion was approved for the violation of 32-12-01-01-14. And which leads us to a disciplinary recommendation in the area of, if Skip, if I heard you correctly, treatment planning and ethics?
Yes, sir. Diagnosed treatment planning, treatment plan, alternative treatment plans, and then the separate treatments are 4 hours in that, and maybe 8 hours in ethics.
May I? This is Jeff.
Well, hold on just a second, Jeff. Yeah, let's just, I just want to make sure. I don't think we can do 8 hours in ethics. Is there an 8-hour ethics course out there? Does anybody know?
I think that number arbitrarily, 4 hours would be fine.
Okay. I would say 4 hours would be good. And then going back to your first diagnosis and treatment planning, and you said some, I just didn't catch everything.
And alternative treatment plans.
Diagnosis, treatment planning, alternative treatment plans for in general or in specific?
In general.
Okay. All right. And how many hours there?
I had said 4, but I can be talked into more.
Okay, so that's fine. We'll say 4 hours and let's say 6 hours in diagnosis, treatment planning, including alternate treatment planning approaches. And then 4 hours in ethics.
Second.
Hold on just a second. And that's fine. I mean, I'll just going to put that back on. Jeff had his hand up as only. Go ahead, Jeff.
So I would add to what Skip said, it's also a record keeping issue. I think part of the recommendation would be record keeping because I think what everyone was pointing out was it says that it was discussed that there were alternative treatment plans, but nobody did any charting.
So you want to include record keeping in that?
Yeah, I mean they need to.
So how many hours of record keeping?
Is that could be included in the same ethics, is it not?
It doesn't have to be. And it can be separate. Now we do risk management, and it covers that sort of thing. So we could do 4 hours of risk management. Would that be better?
I would agree with that. I think.
Okay.
You know. Never mind. Okay.
No, that's fine. So instead of 4 hours of ethics, we'll say 4 hours of risk management, which would include that. Anybody else? So we have a disciplinary recommendation to include 6 hours of diagnosis treatment planning to also include alternate treatment planning approaches, as well as 4 hours in risk management. And Saab, are you okay seconding the modification?
Yes.
Okay. Roll call.
Caputo?
No.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali?
Yes.
Asari?
Yes.
Bukami?
No.
Gorelick?
Yes.
MTS?
Yes.
Kalamji?
Yes.
Kappas?
No.
Martin?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
I think we're the same place, right, April? Our yeses have it?
That's correct.
Okay, so motion passes for that disciplinary action recommendation with the included CE identified. Thank you all very much. That was a tough one. I appreciate the effort put into that. I'm just making notes.
I mean, the first one we've all kind of split on.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, well, good. It was a good discussion. I'm just making notes, so just bear with me for a sec. Okay. All right. We are now on agenda item 5A14. Case number 2025-00018. For the committee, I'm looking at page 2042. I was identifying violations, I think, that were somewhat consistent with what the investigator proposed. But let me go to 2042 while maybe you all are getting there if you're not there already. To see if I see it. Yeah, it was primarily in the middle of the page, possible statutory violation, the 32-12-63-D7. And then what else did I see on this page? I think that's just what I was using as a reference point. And I do think there was an issue. Oh, I think that's what it was in the other findings. So that's why I was seeing a violation of 32-1201-24, I believe is what I wrote down. But I'm not convinced that they're a violation. So I'm open for discussion on this, see wherever the other people are at. So open to the committee for further discussion. Deb.
So, yeah, this is Kappas. Yeah, I agreed with the 32-12-63-D7. That would be against an entity, right, rather than the individual. And that would support a $2,000 administrative fee associated with that.
Well, let me hold on a sec. So unless – here's my – wasn't this a So Ryan or Seamus, if you can, the issue here was the licensee didn't provide an updated address, but I don't see this addressed in 32-12-0101. So
right.
That's
I see that as a violation of 32-1236.
Again, so are we talking about an individual, or are we talking?
Yes. It's the individual.
So if it's the individual, we need to go to 120101, and it would be 120101.
I struggled with this too, Deb, so just so you know. I mean,
completely understandable. So it would be.
I think that is correct. This is Ryan. 1236I is where the violation occurs for failing to provide an address change.
32, what is it, Ryan?
1236I. I'll just read it. It says a licensee who changes the licensee's primary mailing address or place of practice address shall notify the board of that change in writing within 10 days. The board shall impose a penalty of $50 if the licensee fails to notify the board of the change within that time. And then it goes on to say the board shall increase the penalty imposed to $100 if a licensee fails to notify it of the change within 30 days.
Okay. So is that good for you, Seamus?
No, that's great. Good catch, okay. Deb. I would tie it to the 1263.
Or do you mean?
1263A4.
1263.
Committing or aiding directly or indirectly a violation of or noncompliance with any provision of this chapter or any rules adopted by it, as evidenced in 1236I, as Deb stated.
Okay. So start with 32-1263A4 as it relates or as identified in
32-1236I. Yep. Good job, Deb. Remember Kappas, I apologize.
That's okay.
No, I mean, yeah.
But I still want to, if this is an entity, I think we still have the 1263D7, if it's an entity, which I don't know, and that would be.
It's not.
It's not. Okay, then never mind.
So the issue was a dentist working in a practice. They were employed by that practice. That's where the abandonment allegation came from here. But they were still doing their own licensing. So I think we're not dealing with the entity on the licensing part. So I think we're correct there. It's not the entity. This is not an entity issue is what I would – that's what I'm seeing. Unless – does anybody see that differently than I'm seeing it, or are they seeing it the same as me or as Deb is seeing it?
No, I agree with you. It's not the entity.
Okay.
It's the license.
All right. So are we seeing non-disciplinary action here or disciplinary action?
So the action then, other than the administrative fee that would be allocated, we're looking at 32.1201.24. Is that correct?
Correct. On those other findings, no probings, no no charting.
Right.
Basically, no exam and documentation of examination, and no signed consents. So, yes, it would be those two. I just wasn't convinced in my head, which is why I'm just throwing it out there for discussion. Does this raise to the level of a disciplinary or non-disciplinary action?
I would go for disciplinary action.
Okay. Clampy's on disciplinary. Katie?
I'm okay with disciplinary.
Okay. Mia?
Yes, I think I agree with that.
Okay, so let's do this. We have violations of, hold on just a second, because I have to fix it now, Seamus. 32, now I have to go look at my notes. God dang. All right, 32, okay. So, 1263D4 going to 32.1236I. All right. So we have violations of 32.1201.24 and violations of 32.1263D4 as it relates to 32.1236I. Is there a second for those violations?
And just as a clarification, it's 63A4.
A4, that's right. You were correct. I apologize. And I just didn't fix that. So, is there a second?
Second.
And who was that? Is that you, Sabin?
Kalamchi.
Yeah. Okay, second by Kalamchi. Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali?
Yes.
Asari?
Yes.
Bukali?
Yes.
Gorelick?
Yes.
Amchias?
Yes.
Kalamchi?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Motahari?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries for those violations. So as far as our recommendation, we'd have a disciplinary action recommendation to include what, Deb?
I would say it's the risk management, 4 hours of risk management record.
Okay. And then, Ryan, what was the fining issue there?
And it's $100 fine.
Would it be $150? Did he hit that? Did they hit that threshold or just $100?
I thought there was only $100. There's a $50 at 10 days and $100 at 30 days.
It's not aggregate.
I didn't read it that way.
Well, so they're supposed to impose a $50 fine within that time, and then they can increase the penalty to $100. So is it $150 at that point, Seamus, based on the way it reads, or is it just $100?
I think it would just be 100.
Okay. So then we would include a fine of $100 for the violation of 32.1236I. So we have a disciplinary recommendation to include 4 CEs of risk management and a $100 fine for violation of 32.1236I. Is there a second?
Second.
Second, Kalamchi. Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali?
Yes.
Asari?
Yes.
Bukami?
Yes.
Gorelick?
Yes.
Imtiaz?
Yes.
Kalamji?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Matahari?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries for that disciplinary recommendation as discussed. Thank you all very much. We are now on agenda item 5A16, case number 2025-00022. Let me just look. For the committee, I'm looking at 22, page 2292 in our packet. I didn't really have a sense of where to go with this, so I'm just going to open this up for discussion to see where other folks are at. Because I didn't have really anything specifically written down.
I had a disciplinary CVAs for Crown Bridge, so I would make a motion for disciplinary action if we had agreement.
And so 32-12-01-01-14?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Any other feelings from the committee regarding this case?
This is Martin. I had something similar to Dr. Harris, feeling like some Crown and Bridge CE would be a great idea.
Okay. And disciplinary?
Yes.
Okay. Mindy? Mindy, you abstained, correct?
Yes, she's accused.
Yep. Sorry about that.
No worries.
Jeff, I think we're going to look to you a little bit as our general dentist here. What are your thoughts?
Oh, I got the speaker back on. I'm trying to find the page with the x-rays. I did not write it down.
Images start on 19.
No, I have it. I have it now.
Okay. Just getting there for you. No, I'm looking at the wrong page. Sorry.
Here we go. So we're talking just about 6 through 11 at this point.
Correct.
Okay. Well, I do remember seeing the x-rays where the margins were open, and then, but it was said that these crowns were not fully cemented in yet.
Correct.
Said. So I can't make a determination as far as margins that aren't final restorations. I guess my thoughts were the subsequent doctor doing an exam found problem with the crown and bridge, so, and also the consultant in their recommendation that it was improper crown and bridge. I guess without looking in the mouth and seeing, I really don't have a real grasp on this. I did in my notes, allegation one, improper crown and bridge, I thought it was substantiated along with all of the other documentation, but I'm going to have to, when I do these things, write down specific pages and lines.
Well, I do agree with the comment you made because I saw the same thing that the crowns were not cemented. But at the same time, I mean, we do those pre-cementation x-rays all the time, right, to make sure that I guess I'm just asking you as a general dentist, if you were to take a pre-cementation x-ray and you saw that you had an open margin and then in response to that you felt like the crown wasn't seated all the way, wouldn't you do something to seat the crown all the way and then take another x-ray?
Yes, I agree with that. And usually what happens is especially when you're doing multiple crowns side by side. You know, this is computer generated work, so chances are the contacts are too tight and it won't let it sit all the way. So what you have to do is go back to the contacts, and I don't recall, and I was looking for that specifically in the notes.
I think that was any effort to, or any indication.
There was no indication that someone was using floss and contact paper and all this stuff to,
correct,
to justify that there were, the contacts were correct. I was looking for that, and I didn't see any documentation. Now, you know, we can't get into someone's head and assume that they write every little thing. That's just normal practice, is check the contacts. If the contacts are too tight and it won't let it seat, you adjust it until it seats. But then, like you're saying, what you're alluding to, if I understand you, is if you have an x-ray that shows an open margin, adjust, take another x-ray.
Or ensure that it's seated all the way. Yeah,
verify. And then, of course, we all nowadays take x-rays post-op, post-cementation, to verify that the margins are closed and that everything, that got all the cement out of there.
Correct.
And, you know, so I didn't see that. So,
yep. I appreciate that as well. Okay. Yeah. Saba.
Would you call that failure to recognize complication?
It's not necessarily a complication as such. It's just that it's sort of like not doing your due diligence to ensure that you actually, basically the goal with placing a crown is to ensure you have a closed margin. If you don't have a closed margin, you don't cement the crown. Well, if your rationale to why you had an open margin was it was pre-cementation, then just as Jeff was saying, you would have had a post x-ray to verify that, in fact, the margin was closed. So not having any of that there, we're only left with, was there any verification ever that the crowns the margins were actually closed on these crowns? And there is a recognition issue there, but I think it's more about documenting, because I think you can say, well, the margins were closed after we cemented, but if you don't have anything to provide evidence to that, then you don't know. Mari.
I just had a question about the x-ray with the open margin. Could you, could he reference that page so I could,
Let's see. If you go up to the consultant's report, Mari, I think it's there because they kind of, let me just see.
Because I looked at the x-rays, from a previous case, there was an open margin, but this one, there is some residue. I don't think it's even maybe temporary cement, but I didn't see, but maybe I'm mistaken. I'm going to look at it again and see.
No, you'd have to go down to the images, but you did see where things were not seated all. You could tell there was an open margin on the x-rays. And then the response by the licensee was that, well, it was a pre-cementation x-ray and the crown wasn't seated all the way. What are your thoughts since we have you?
For this case, the aesthetic is in a way lacking. The design of the case could improve greatly. The shade is the shade, but the laterals are way longer than the centrals. Number 10, it's even longer than number 7. The canines are sharp and long also. So the aesthetic could improve greatly. And I don't know if that's corrected or not, because he did 2 sets, correct, for her?
Yes, there was a remake, yes.
So I don't know if this is the original or the remake, 224. But I wouldn't cement a case that comes from the lab with this design. Let's say it could way improve than this. So.
There is a comment on 2289 by the investigator that the placement of the crowns are not an optimal function, and the margins are circumferentially open and not aligned correctly, affecting the patient's bite and causing sensitivity issues. Skip, where did you start out on this? Or did you?
I didn't dig into the analysis because I'm an oral surgeon, but it's pretty clear to me that there was some not great crown bridge work. So I feel like a disciplinary finding and then some CEs on crown bridge would probably take care of this nicely.
I would agree. All right, so let's do this. We're identifying a violation of 32-1201-0114. Motion by Harris. Is there a second?
This is Martin. I second.
Second by Martin. Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali?
Yes.
Asfari?
Yes.
Fukami?
Yes.
Baralek?
Yes.
MTS?
Yes.
Palanchi?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
And Motihari is recused.
Correct. Okay, motion carries for violation of 32-1201-0114. Leading us into a disciplinary recommendation. Skip, would you be amenable to credits CARES for this, or do you think it could be done without going through that program?
I think just some standard, you know, 8 hours of CEs and restorative and chronic bridge dentistry.
Would you think to include that diagnosis, treatment planning, restorative approaches, and then managing complications?
That would be fine.
So how about 12 CEs in diagnosis, treatment planning, restoration of crown and bridge, as well as managing complications?
Very
sexy. Okay. So I'm just getting this down.
Dr. Caputo, for clarification, is that 4 CEs each, or is that one very long category for 12 CEs?
One category for 12 CEs. 12 CEs to cover those areas. A lot of times you can do classes that will have kind of them all combined, and then maybe give the flexibility to the practitioner to put that together.
Thank you.
Yeah, you bet. And I'm just making notes here. Any other changes or additions to that? Are we okay with that recommendation? Well, let me start there. So anything to add? Okay.
Are we going to look at restitution separately?
That was my next thing.
Okay.
So if we're okay with that, then yes, you are correct. So then I'm making my next note here. And I think that investigator did this really well. I would love for them all to do it the same way. But it starts on page 2291. It said patient paid $8,148. If you just look at the crowns, it was $6,118. And then below that, insurance paid $2,712 for the crown, buildups and crowns. If just the crowns, it's $2,272. So I don't think anybody's arguing or considering the buildups, correct?
Correct.
So then I would say restitution in the amount of $6,818 to the patient and $2,272 to the insurance. That seem correct?
Yes.
Okay. And so that would be included with the recommendation, yes. Further discussion? Is there a second to that recommendation?
Kappa second.
Okay. All right, let me just do one thing here. I'm making sure I'm on the right page, sorry. Okay, roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali?
Yes.
Asfari?
Yes.
Sukami?
Yes.
Gorelick?
Yes.
MTS?
Yes.
Kalanchi?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin? Martin? Okay, and Motihari is recused.
So motion carries for that disciplinary recommendation as described. Okay.
This is Martin. Sorry, I was having technical difficulties, but yes, okay. I'm here.
So can you add that, April?
Yes, thank you.
That's fine. All right. Thank you, Katie. All right, we are now on agenda item 5A20, case number 2025-00036. I didn't, for the committee, I'm looking at page 3768. I didn't see a violation. I was going to propose a non-disciplinary recommendation in risk management. So we'll take it from there and see where everybody else is at. So open for discussion.
Yes, that's what I had as well.
Great. Anyone else?
30 seconds.
Okay, so we have a recommendation for non-disciplinary CE, 4 hours of risk management. Moved by Caputo, seconded by Harris. Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali?
Yes.
Asfari?
Yes.
Sukami?
Yes.
Gorelick?
Yes.
MTS?
Yes.
Kalanchi?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries for that non-disciplinary recommendation. Saba, you got to leave early?
Absolutely. In 5 minutes, I get patient.
Well, I'm going to beat you today, Saba. I'm going to beat you. We are on our last agenda item, 4A24, case number 2025-00048. For the committee, I'm looking at page 4326, and I was going to propose the same. A non-disciplinary recommendation in risk management. Open second. For discussion.
Second.
Is that Fukami without wasting a minute? Wow.
I'm trying to beat the time.
You're working for Saba here. All right. So we have a motion by Caputo, seconded by Fukami, for a non-disciplinary recommendation to include 4 CEs in risk management. Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali?
Yes.
Asfari?
Yes.
Sukami?
Yes.
Gorelick?
Yes.
MTS?
Yes.
Kalanchi?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
Okay. Motion carries for that disciplinary recommendation. Great job, everybody. That concludes agenda item 5. So next thing is agenda item 6. And Jeff, as well as everybody else, but just to add on to more things for you to know, if you go down.
Dr. Caputo, I have to leave. Thank you.
You said 3 o'clock, Saba. I got five minutes.
Okay. Oh, we have 5 minutes. Okay, I'll wait.
So if you go down to agenda item 6 and click on it, Jeff, you'll see a case log come up. The idea there is for you to kind of peruse that. If you identify, this is for all committee members, but if you identify a case that you feel as though you may have a conflict on, then the opportunity would to, and who's the appropriate person to contact, Brian, April or somebody else?
That would be me.
Okay, so you would contact April and let her know that you have a conflict. They're going to send you a form to complete so that we have that on file. So that's kind of the idea of that complaint log being there. And that's always in our packet when you receive it. Okay? We are on agenda item 7, summary of current events. Ryan, you want to add anything? I think you sent out some emails recently keeping us abreast of what's going on, and I think the most current thing is that the legislature decided to take a break and get paid for it.
I believe that was included in his email. He had to step out of the meeting.
Oh, he's out.
Yeah.
See, he missed my fun lead-in. Thanks a lot, Ryan. All right, but there is nothing else to add. Anything from the staff to add or committee?
Not from staff, no.
Okay. Is there a calendar of all of our meeting dates anywhere? Does Yasmin have that?
This is Yasmin. Yes. I believe she also posted on the board's website, but if you'd like, I can send them out to the committee.
I think it'd be good. I imagine you already sent them out to Dr. Ali and Dr. Gorelick.
That's correct. They already have okay.
So we will I don't know when we will. April, when will we look for next year? When will we start doing that?
That would be around August. It's when I'll put it on your agenda. And that
okay.
would be enough time to.
So around August, we'll start looking at dates. As you guys can all tell, we've sort of settled in on Tuesday afternoons as our meeting time. And so I know probably for most of us that have been on the committee for a while, it's become a day that we've already sort of set aside in our calendars. So for Dr. Ali and Dr. Gorelick, I'm just kind of targeting Tuesday afternoons. And I think we're generally averaging about once a month, or is it every other month?
I would say generally about once a month. There are a few that get skipped for various okay. reasons, but yeah.
So just prepare as we get towards the middle of summer. We'll have a discussion of some proposed dates, and then we'll start looking at those so that we have consensus. The requirement is obviously not to attend every meeting. We'd love for all the members to be at every meeting, but things do come up. I would just implore those folks that when you get your notification from Yasmin, there's a way to respond to indicate that you will be at the meeting. It's just I think it's helpful as well as respectful to her to do that so she doesn't have to chase people down. If you can't make the meeting, say you can't make the meeting. And if it's a maybe, put that too. But responding is helpful to her so that we don't have to do extra work or we don't put extra work on board staff. Our next committee meeting is scheduled for June 24th, and I don't have anything else. Anything from the committee? Staff? Well, it is now 2:59, 1 minute before Saba has to leave, and I will call this meeting adjourned. Thank you all so much.